In episode 286, we were delighted to welcome the lovely Hester and Kelly Granger to talk about their experience of having ADHD and autism. And they're back. This time we're going to delve into the practical aspects of neurodiversity, and Hester and Kelly are going to share some fantastic tips that will help you if you have or suspect you have ADHD or are autistic.
You're listening to the Declutter Hub podcast, bringing you tried and tested, no-nonsense tips and advice from the leading experts in decluttering and organising your home. Now here's your host, Leslie Spellman.
Hello and welcome, listeners. I'm Leslie. We're delighted you're here to join us as part of your decluttering journey. So whether you're brand new today or have been listening in for ages, we want to say thank you so much for being here. It means so much to Ingrid and I that you turn up every week to listen to and support us while we talk all things decluttering and organising. We'd love to help more people with their quest for a clutter-free home, and our podcast is a fantastic way for people to be inspired to take action. We have a favour to ask. If you like what you hear, be sure to hit the follow, subscribe or like button on your podcast player. Share us with your friends or share your thoughts on the podcast by leaving a review. Okay, welcome back, Hester and Kelly. And I'm actually laughing here because before we started recording, I was like, am I getting the language right? Language is so important in the decluttering world. We have people with hoarding behaviours, hoarding disorders, living with ADHD, have ADHD, are autistic, suspect they are, going through it. So what do we say? So we had a big discussion about the language, because for me, it's very important to get that right. I never want the language that I use or other people use to hit hard to somebody who doesn't want to be recognized or labeled in that way. So we did have a conversation, and I think it's useful to spend just a couple of minutes talking about your understanding of the language that we should use around people that are autistic or have ADHD.
Yeah, and I think the first thing I should say is that if you're talking to somebody that's neurodivergent, no matter what the condition is, diagnosed or self-diagnosed, the best thing to do is just ask them, how do you refer to yourself? What language do you use? What do you prefer? That's the best thing. But as a community, if I'm talking kind of from an autistic person's point of view, from a community, we tend to prefer an autistic person than a person that has autism or with autism. And the reason being is that has autism gives this connotation that, or this narrative that autism isn't a part of the person, and it's something maybe you could catch like a virus and then you can cure. It's not. You're born autistic. It's the way your brain's wired. So I am an autistic person rather than I have autism. It's not something that I bring along to a party with me and say, look, I brought autism with me today. I am autistic. And that's the kind of difference in the language. And I think for many years, language has been created by clinicians and by people speaking on behalf of those that are autistic, so maybe parents, and they try to use language that maybe softens the conversation that they're having with other people. Because sometimes, right, it can be a really awkward conversation, because if you're saying to somebody, you know, my son, he's autistic, you can see their face and they go, oh, I'm really sorry about that. And then almost to soften the blow, I think people maybe change language. So, oh, they have autism. And they use other language that we don't use as well, like, oh, but he's high functioning, so that's a good thing. Or, but he's got superpowers. Autism is his superpower. So we don't kind of use that language because it gives this narrative that isn't correct, isn't right. So I think particularly in the autism community, language is really important, because we've been talking about autism for many more years than we have, for instance, than ADHD. And I think there's a big community of adults now that are autistic. They're saying, well, hold on, let us tell you what the language should be, rather than people that aren't autistic.
Yep. No, thank you for clarifying. And ADHD then, Hester?
This is the confusing bit, because people say, I have ADHD, like you're bringing it along to a party. But I think it's because ADHD, you can take medication for it. So your ADHD can be, inverted commas, managed, whereas you can't take medication for being autistic. So I think that's where it comes from, is this I have ADHD. But also, it's worth remembering that only in 2008 it recognized that adults could have ADHD. Before 2008, it was considered something that children had. So I think it's really interesting. The language is huge, but as Kelly said, I think it's just about asking the person that you're talking to what they feel most comfortable with. Because you may well get some adults, you had it a while ago, saying, no, I have autism. And Kelly was like, okay, there we go. So you can't argue with someone. And some people like to say they have superpowers, but as Kelly said, there's a whole narrative behind that.
But I just think it's really important to get it right. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't, and everyone, as you say, everyone is entitled to call it what they like themselves. Do you know what I mean? But other people need to be respectful of how that lands and how that feels to the person that you're talking to or communicating with. So let's get practical now. So we talked a lot about, your journeys, the ones of your children, how it's sort of affected your household. But now I want to start to get practical and talk about things that you've implemented in your household, specifically organization, daily chores, decluttering, if that's a thing. What sort of things have you implemented in your household to help you?
Such a good question. How many times do we take stuff to the charity shop? We just you come in and I'm like, oh, I'm just having a clear out, and you're like, oh my God, it looks like a bomb's gone off, because I'm constantly like, I love to shop, I love clothes a lot, and you then end up with lots of clothes, and then you're like, it's almost got to be like a one in one out now. I had a huge clear out, didn't I? I'm selling loads of stuff at the moment on Vinted, getting rid of just so much stuff, because you then open the cupboard. We've got like a shoe cupboard downstairs, like a coat cupboard, and you open it and you're just like, God, it's overwhelming otherwise, isn't it? So I think it's just trying to keep on top of it by having a clear out. But I think a tip is really important, is to then not then either drive around with all the clothes and the everything you're getting rid of in the back of the boot to go to the charity shop, because that always happens, or sits in the garage or wherever for ages. It's like, if you know you're going to have a clear out, and I don't always do this, do I? If you know you're going to have a clear out, try and take it to the charity shop at the same day, so that it's then kind of just gone, because otherwise you then end up with a garage full of stuff just because it's all out the cupboards, it's just in a different place. But yeah, I think we're constantly trying to like edit our home, aren't we, and just keep things that we really love that are great. But we do love things and we love stuff, and the kids are the same, and some friends have sort of quite minimalist houses, and I go around and I'm like, God, that's so beautiful. It's just not us, and I just think it's not realistic. And whiteboards, love a whiteboard. We don't always update them, but
But we have lots. Three on the fridge. We've got one in here that you can't
it's
see.
like our office.
And it's just where we write all our notes and things to do, what we've done, what we haven't done. And as Hess said, some of them could go updated for weeks. And we go, oh, we really must update that board. Notes, we both write lots of notes. We use our phone a lot. So in the notes function, every time we think of we need to do something, we'll go into the notes and write it down. So it's there, it's in our phone, it's on us all the time. And it's kind of, we need to try and kind of be organized, don't we? That's kind of what we do. We know also, we're kind of fully aware that any jobs that we start in the house have to be completed in one day. If we do something to, so let's say it's a bit of decorating, want to paint a wall or paint a room, it has to be done today, otherwise it won't get finished, because almost that kind of dopamine hit is gone. We've done it, it's done, paintbrush down, the next day it's like, well, can't start that again, it's done, that's in the past, and we kind of move on. So we're fully aware of that now, and it's fine because we know how to manage that. But yeah, every kind of big project we have to do, it must be done in a 24-hour period. Otherwise, it won't get done for a number of weeks or months. I mean, the example we did on the previous podcast with you around the go-kart, that's a really good example. We didn't get it fixed that day. It went on for years,
6 years.
and then we finally got it done. So I think it's understanding the things, triggers, understanding kind of your traits and characteristics. You know how to manage certain things, and also you can then be a bit kinder to yourself. And you're saying, but that's okay. We didn't do that, or that's not perfect, or that room doesn't look how we want it to, but that's fine. Don't worry about that. They're small things in kind of the grand scheme of things, aren't they?
And I think object permanence has a huge part to play, and I didn't know this was a thing until a couple of years ago. And I remember being little, and my mum had like bought me some new school shoes, and I remember like having them out on the shoe box, like at the end of my bed. So when I woke up, I was like, oh my God, there are my shoes, because if they were in the box, if they were in the cupboard, I just wouldn't remember that they were there. And now I know with ADHD, object permanence is where if something is not in front of you, you just forget it exists. And so that's why whiteboards are so impactful, because I literally have, how many notepads have we got here? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, about 7 notepads genuinely sitting next to me here, but they're all closed. So you don't then actually remember with your ADHD brain to open it and look at what's in it. So that's why you can end up with situations that need to be decluttered, because you end up with lots of things out and stuff. Because if it's put away in a drawer, if I bought a new bag or a dress or whatever it is, if it's away, I genuinely forget it exists, which is like, sounds silly when you say it, but it's...
No, it's true. And I think it also, it's the same with people.
Mm.
So we have that same situation, people, the two of us. So if we don't see somebody, hear something for a long time, we almost forget about them, that they exist. They're not there until they pop up again. Oh, God, I haven't spoken to you for months.
Mm.
Because there's been no connection, no contact. And so out of sight, out of mind, they're not around, and you completely forget that they exist until the next time that you interact.
Which is awful. And if you speak to other ADHDs, they're like, oh my God. Every now and again, I'll go through my WhatsApp. This is terrible with my friends, actually. Like, go through my WhatsApps to be like, oh my God, really must connect with this person. So you find these strategies and tools to do these things. But yeah, object permanence will go hand in hand, excuse me, with the clutter, because you have things out, like vitamins. We've got all our vitamins out on the side in the kitchen because they're in a cupboard. No one's going to be taking them at all.
There's a few things that I want to return to from a sort of decluttering perspective on those, and they're all get everything that you're talking about. So one of the things that we have something called a cycle of success, right? And so basically, if you you talk about a couple of things, you were talking about the charity shop runs and getting to the end point, and you were also talking about finishing things within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So what we're big advocates of is that you need to know what you're heading into. So then we have a cycle that you go around, you do it step by step, and that can be... We don't necessarily go all out and do a kitchen in one day. We need to break it down into something that we know we can achieve within that time scale, right? And so it's really important to plan and go, what's realistic, rather than just lump, going in, the impulsivity perhaps of ADHD will go, let's just get it all done. I just want to do that. That's what I'm going to do today, rather than really going, you know what? I've done that many times, failed, and it still sits there and it's in the thing. And so it's really important to plan and to take things one step at a time, but also to have a real feel for getting to that end point, which is our exit plan, which is where you take it to the charity shop, right? And absolutely, like you were like, if you can get that to the charity shop on the day, then that's a job complete. And then it gives you that, it gives you that adrenaline rush of having completed that, which is going to motivate you on to do another little mini task tomorrow or whatever. The other thing that you talked about, which is quite useful, is about, or you were talking about object permanence, right? Which is kind of almost, we call it the value of visibility. And so it's finding that balance, right? Because when people have got cluttered homes, it's like, is it really useful for something to be out on display if you have 100 things the same? And so that works really well in a house that's not that cluttered, if that makes sense. So those things come to the fore and pop up and you see them when your eyes open that morning, when you saw your shoes or whatever. But it's finding that balance, because you can't leave everything out to remind you that you need to do things, because then by its virtue, it's just going to disappear into the ether with everything else and you're not going to see it. So I think it's important to less is more when it comes to those kind of strategies, and recognizing where those kind of strategies are not working. So sometimes they won't work because there's too many of those visual reminders hanging around. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, it was just so many interesting things. Well, I'm just going to add my little bit in here. And I also wanted to talk to you about the notebook, whiteboard, visual kind of reminder scenario. It's something... I know my son really struggles. The Kanban method, right, which is a kind of moving along. Are you familiar with the Kanban method? It's kind of...
I'm going to pretend then, and I thought this will go wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we know it well. No.
There's a kind of... And it is out there quite a bit in the ADHD community, which is kind of process of moving. You'll be familiar with it, right? Moving, because there's different versions of it. Having a load of post-it notes with three things that you want to do, priority, urgent, whatever, and you kind of move them around and you kind of move them forward. But because they're all on kind of post-it notes, coloured post-it notes, it's really visible and obvious, and you would have like one whiteboard and a sort of Kanban situation on that.
Mm.
My son, even though my son understands the principle that would really work, he operates in a digital world, right? And there are digital Kanban boards. And so... yes, it is better to have the kind of visibility on these things if you have ADHD. And so, but is it going to work if you operate in the digital world? Because you're never going to, like, I've got a whiteboard here. And I've never looked at it since the day I put it up. I thought, oh, that'd be amazing to have a whiteboard. And it's literally got my son's scribblings on it, and that have been there for 2 years, never used it, because I just operate in my digital world.
Well, I mean, Trello board's amazing for that. That's a board that I absolutely love. It's almost like the visual post-it notes.
Exactly.
You can drag them along and have to-do lists. But I think sometimes having ADHD, you don't know where to start with it. And I remember when I first discovered Trello quite a few years ago working for a PR agency, I was like, but I don't know how to set it up, because you get this blank template and it's just like this whole. So I think having ADHD, sometimes that seems a great idea, the Trello board. What does it look like? What should it be? So then if someone else says, oh, here's a really great template you can copy, you're like, okay, that's great. Because I remember I was doing one, and we tried it, didn't we, together as for Perfectly Autistic for our business. And we were like, right, let's see how it works. And it just didn't really work, because it was like something else to remember to look at. But if you're digital and you love that, I think Trello is amazing.
Whereas I'm the opposite. I like something tactile, tangible that I can see, rather than I have to open up and go into it. If I can move stuff around or see it, it's there. But then you've got different generations now. You know, you've got younger generations that all they do is digital, and they wouldn't think about having something on the wall. Why would you do that? That's ridiculous. There's a software system for that. You can do that. So it really does depend on the individual, doesn't it? Mm.
And a system is only ever as good as the information that you put into it, which is why a lot of people will fall at the first hurdle, because it's too complicated to set up in the first place. And so it's like, oh, that doesn't work, that's gone. Do you know what I mean? But give it time if you can, you know, commit to that project, try and make it work, and then it may be revolutionary to you. And so I think that's it. So it's a tricky one. But yeah, no, really interesting points. I wanted to talk, Kelly, about the employment situation. So you've worked for big corporates and you got diagnosed with autism at 43, did you say 44, yep, something like that? And so how did you share that with your employers? Did that make a difference? I know you now go out and talk to other corporates about how to deal with neurodiversity in the workplace. So what was your experience of that, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, what we do today is kind of born out of the reaction I got from my company at the time.
Right.
So, you know, I was diagnosed at the back end of 2019 as autistic. And I, you know, we went through kind of the process, and then I thought, well, who do I tell, and should I tell anybody? Because I think the problem is anything to do with any kind of mental health or kind of hidden disability, particularly with men, and kind of my experience in business anyway, if it's particularly men, it's seen as a real weakness. You know, it's not physical, so it's not taken seriously. And people say, well, don't be ridiculous. Take the day off and you'll be fine tomorrow. You know, you just need a rest. So I was a bit worried, is that going to be the same with autism? So I thought, well, actually, I will tell my work for me, because I almost wanted to let them know that some of the things, maybe the challenges I had, or maybe they've made comments in the past about you're a bit blunt, or you're a bit too honest, or, you know, you didn't react in social situations the way that I expected you to. I almost wanted to know that there was a reason for that. And also I wanted to show to Hudson India, do you know what? It's okay to be autistic. We shouldn't be hiding it. And if I hadn't disclosed it to my work, what message would I be sending to them? So I thought it through, and we talked on the previous podcast we did with you, that I think through numbers of different scenarios. So I'd come up with scenarios about what my boss would say, how he would say it, what my answer would be, all these kinds. So I had about five different scenarios of how this conversation would go. And at the time, I was the sales director for the London business, a big global company I worked for. He was a sales director for the UK and Ireland. And I picked up the phone. I said to him, look, this is the process we've been through with our children. It's resonated with me a lot. And I've gone through a similar process, and I've actually received a formal diagnosis, and I am autistic. And the first thing he did was he laughed out loud at me and he said, well, you don't look autistic. And that was kind of his reaction. And it wasn't one of the reactions I'd pre-prepared in my head. And it kind of went, I thought, okay, that wasn't what I was expecting. That was a bit, you know, a bit of a negative reaction. So I thought, well, if I explained to him a bit more about what I'd already learned about myself in terms of, you know, maybe being blunt or social situations, he might understand. And he just turned around and said, oh, I just thought you had a stick up your ass. And that's almost kind of where the conversation went. And then, you know, he spoke to kind of HR that day, and they'd obviously said, what did you say? And, you know, it kind of went from there. And that was where I decided that, you know, this company isn't right for me. now that I know what I know, and maybe this career isn't right for me, because I've been in sales, right, for 23 odd years in different guises through different companies. And that's where I kind of looked, and I kind of reached out to lots of other neurodivergent people, mainly kind of autistic, to find out what their experience of disclosing to their workplace has been. And, you know, unfortunately, it was quite a common reaction. And I think it's because workplaces have no awareness or no understanding at all about what autism is or what neurodiversity is. So they either say the wrong thing or they don't say anything at all because they're scared of saying the wrong thing. And that's kind of when we made the decision, look, this isn't right. This is happening to me and all these other people I spoke to. With our background in the corporate world, with our understanding now of kind of autism and then ADHD, maybe we can do some good. Maybe we can kind of, I don't know, raise that awareness within companies. But also more importantly, is acceptance that actually neurodiversity is a thing. Because I think if you tell some people, they'll still look at you and go, really? Is that really a thing? You know, I can't see any issues. What's the problem? And so I think that's where we started, didn't we? We started to talk to companies about it. And from a selfish point of view, we, you know, India and Hudson are 12 and 14 now. And so in the next kind of 5 to 10 years, they're going to make that transition from education into the workplace. So our thinking is if we can talk to as many companies and people as possible, that maybe when they go through that transition, it's going to be a much more positive environment for them when they go into that kind of workplace.
I think it's definitely a more understanding world now than it was several years ago. And it seems to be going very quickly, in my opinion, in terms of people are having the right departments, having people that will look at that kind of thing in their HR departments and stuff like that. Am I right? I mean, you're at the cutting edge of it, Kelly. Is that right? Or do you think it's still slow? I'm sure it's slower than you would like it to be, but is it better than it was and improving?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be better than it was because, let's say, awareness has increased, understanding. I think it's though finding companies that want to do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So yes, most organizations absolutely. Are still at the very beginning of their journey. You know, some of them still don't even know what neurodiversity is when I speak to them. And you have to kind of go through the process of understanding the different kind of conditions. So I think lots of companies are getting on board now. I think what I want to do is get to a point where companies are getting on board with it and want to understand because they want to make it a better environment for their people. They want to support all of their people, no matter what their way of thinking or working is. But also because they genuinely see the benefit of, well, if we make this a more neurodivergent friendly place, it's not just going to benefit the people that are neurodivergent. It's actually going to help everybody because it's around communication. It's around process. It's about how do you recruit people into your company? It's about the environment, you know, the sensitivities we talked about previously, light, noise, sound and smell. And so I'd love us to get to that point where companies genuinely on board and go, this is a benefit for us. I think where we are at the moment, companies are starting to talk about it, which is fantastic. But I think we've still got a lot of companies that are doing it because they need to be seen to be doing it. So they'll do it for one day a year or 1 week a year when it's, you know, Neurodiversity Celebration Week or Autism Acceptance Day. And they'll have a big, oh, we're doing a speaker on that day. And then they don't do anything else.
Yeah.
So what I'd like them to do is go, actually, it's a long-term thing. We're not going to fix it overnight. But let's start talking about it so our people feel a bit more comfortable.
I think that's happening though, isn't it, now a little bit more? Like, we've been going perfectly autistic, we're going about 3.5 years now, haven't we? And we've really seen that. Originally it was, can you come and talk to us about neurodiversity, one-off talk, this, and now it's projects, now it's can you do time management training,
it's workshops, it's, so I think, yeah, you're right, people are starting to understand the value and why they should be doing it. We just need that too, you know. It's never going to be fast enough for us, if I'm
honest.
But that's just the way it is. But yeah, it is starting to pick up pace. And I think also the younger generation are a lot better at discussing these sorts of things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They'll be coming into these managerial roles before we know it, and then it will be a completely different place. Absolutely. No, it's important. So thank you for explaining that a little bit more, how it is from your perspective. So I'm going to pop to a break again, and then we're going to come back. And there's a couple of things that I want to talk about, one of which is body doubling. And then I want to talk about alcohol freedom. So see you in a moment. Welcome back. Now, there's a couple of things that you do that you offer then as a, do you call yourself an ADHD coach then, Hester?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. An ADHD coach, and so as part of your ADHD coaching work, you do something called body doubling, which is something that gets thrown around in the Declutter Hub community. And people are probably a little bit like, what even is that? And is that going to be useful? Can you explain the principle of body doubling? Because it's something that a lot of people do in the decluttering world as well. So what is body doubling and do people need it in their lives?
So yes, they do 100%. And they'll probably be doing it without realizing it. We've been body doubling for years and having no idea what it is. All it is having someone with you. So if we take the scenario of decluttering, right? Someone is with you, whether it's a friend or a family member or a decluttering expert like yourself, having that person with you whilst you are decluttering. So they're not necessarily doing it. They're not helping. They are just either in the room. They're either helping keep you on task. We do it quite a lot when we're doing emails together. And I don't need Kelly to help me with my emails. I just need him to be there and be present and then maybe just go, do you want to, how are you getting on with those emails? It's just like a check-in. So body doubling is something that's hugely impactful, especially when it comes to ADHD, because it almost is like just that bit of a support network. And quite often with my ADHD coaching clients, I suggest that they have someone else that they can do. And obviously so many people work from home now, but I know some of my clients just have someone else that they're on Zoom with the whole day. They might not even be a colleague in their company. And it's just someone to go, how are you getting on with that? Just a quick check-in. And it just keeps you more accountable than otherwise. If you're meant to be sorting out your kitchen and decluttering the worktop, it's very easy to go down that rabbit hole of getting everything out of the drawers and not actually keeping on track with it. So that body doubling just enables someone. It's literally having a body double of you there just to sort of keep you on track.
Yeah, we have in our membership, we do something called success sessions. And so twice a week, our members come in, we put a timer on, we introduce things, people say, this is what I'm going to do. Timer goes on for 50 minutes. Everybody works together, but separately on Zoom, but you can see. And then we come back for the last 5 minutes and say, did we achieve it? Did we not? It might be just doing the washing up for that day or doing some chores. It might be doing a decluttering project. It might be answering an email. It could be anything. So there's no, you don't have to do decluttering per se. You just have to do something that's going to move your life on. And it works an absolute treat. And people who need that level of accountability find it fantastic. So body doubling is fantastic. If you feel that you are inattentive, if you struggle to retain focus, if you find yourself, you know, looking at photographs when you're supposed to be decluttering your knicker drawer, all of those kind of things are fantastic for body doubling. And it's a massive, massive, massively impactful thing. And it's obviously working with your clients as well. Now, one of the things that you've spoken about that I've picked up is that you, is it both of you? Are you both alcohol free?
We are, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I feel like I need to high five. Yeah, we are. We did it a few years ago, didn't we? And it was, ironically, I'm 9 months and I wasn't pregnant, but it just happened to be 9 months. And then I just think we didn't really realise the impact it was having, did we? I think we've been alcohol free now since, makes it sound like an alcoholic. We weren't an alcoholic, but since 24th of December, not just gone, the year before. So it's
2022.
Yeah, I'm really bad with dates.
So a little over a year.
Yeah. And it's just been hugely impactful, hasn't it? We both just, we'd had a big Christmas Eve party and we woke up the next day and both went, and we're done. And it was just one of those where I said to you quite often, like, our son's autistic, he still wakes up in the night. And I said, that is almost the time when I appreciate being alcohol free the most, because we would drink normal amount, whatever normal is, you know, we would have a glass of wine to celebrate something, doing, you know, something great or perfect autistic, or we'd have a glass of wine if we'd had a bit of a rubbish day, or we'd have a glass of wine to watch a film with. You just make excuses, don't you, really, for having a glass of wine or having a...
If you're having a good day, you have a glass of wine. If you're having a bad day, you're having a glass of wine. It kind of, it's almost the thing that fixes everything.
Yeah. So I think we just decided after this very big Christmas Eve party that actually we were just done. And it's been over a year, so we've now obviously done all the birthdays, all our holidays, everything, and actually it's amazing.
We sleep better, you know, you get up in the morning, you're not kind of a bit hazy from the night before, or even a glass or two. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because it doesn't matter how much you drink, it might not be a lot, but it still affects, even if just one glass or two glasses. You can really feel it through the night, or you're thirsty, or you wake up, or you know, the next morning. So I think it's been a real game changer for us. I mean, I think on the flip side, I think I probably used to use alcohol, and not huge amounts. I wasn't an alcoholic or anything, but I probably used to use alcohol to make social situations that much easier, to kind of get me through that kind of social interaction, whether it's a party or seeing friends or a work event, having a drink there was quite handy, and kind of the alcohol kind of relaxed a bit inhibitions, and it allowed me to kind of have more conversations. But I don't miss it at all, do we? We thought we
No.
might, but not at
Yeah.
all.
So in the context of autism and ADHD, do you think it has an impact specifically on some of the, if we want to call them, symptoms of that? So
I do
which
massively.
so obviously the autism, did it let you drop your guard a little bit on the perfectionism? Is that what you're sort of saying? If it alleviated some of that anxiety associated with trying to
It
preempt
did. The
everything.
anxiety, there were a couple of things. The anxiety kind of went away a bit and helped me relax a little bit more without trying to be perfect. But also, it enabled me to kind of use that, kind of have a drink in between the conversations or the questioning, where, I wasn't sure what to say next. I could have a drink, and that was a good break in a conversation. So, a number of different things, but
I think for me, having ADHD and having a drink, I mean, I love alcohol, right? And I would go and I would almost like, I would have one, and it's like, if you've seen the Mickey Flanagan stand-up routine where he's like, I've got the flavour, and I'd have one, but it'd almost be like then two, and then two might not be enough, and then you'd have three glasses, and then it's like, at what point does it stop? And it's a quiet Friday night in. We don't go out massively now, do we? But even when we go out, if I was going out with friends or whatever, I'd think, oh, I won't drink too much. And they're always the nights that you end up on some, out to whatever silly hour and stuff. And you just sort of think, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, by the way, if anyone's doing it, and I do it for like 45 years, did it for a long time. But I just think for us, it has been really interesting, that change, hasn't it? And I think it's really interesting because people go, oh my God, you lose loads of weight and your skin looks great and all this. I have to say, I don't think I had that. I craved sugar for like 2 months, and I just broke out in loads of spots. And I thought, oh, no one talks about this for dry January, do they? It was really quite impactful. But obviously, all that's calmed down and things. But yeah, I mean, it's been life changing. And the more people you speak to, the more people are like, yeah, no, I've been doing this for a while now, or yeah, sober curious, I think they call it, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's while we're trying to find strategies, when we recognize that we've got that we're not neurotypical then, and we're trying to find strategies to make our lives better, easier, more organized, whatever that looks like. That's just another thing that we've got that we can call upon, and something that is it simple? I don't know. I don't know whether it's simple or not, but a year down the line, you've found it okay. I'm sure it's been, difficult at times, and you think, oh, that would be
No,
nice. Has it
you know
not? Has it
what?
not
No,
thought?
and not in a smug way. Even when we were on holiday, there's so many alcohol-free options now. So love an alcohol-free beer, love an alcohol-free shandy. Great alcohol, So some people who are alcohol-free don't then want anything that almost reminds them of alcohol. And whereas I like a really nice drink, and I'll have it in a wine glass because I do think it tastes nicer. And so actually, I think that's what we're saying, is we thought it'd be really difficult. And even on nights out and things with friends, I don't need it as a crutch to like be able to chat to people. Surprise, surprise. So for me, it's not hugely impacted me that way. But also, you save so much money. You don't have to get taxis. And so, yeah, to be honest, we thought it'd be challenging, and it hasn't been, which is quite nice.
Fantastic. That'll be a job for 2024 for me then. Another note to self. Thank you so much for sharing everything today. It's been absolutely incredible to get insight from people who really know what this is about and are going out there and spreading awareness in the wider world. I love that. Tell us a little bit more about Perfectly Autistic and what you do, where people can find you if they want to know more and things like that.
Do you want me to
Yeah, go on.
do that? So, Perfectly Autistic, we are a neurodiversity consultancy working with workplaces, organisations, etc., to help them understand the benefits of having a neurodivergent workforce. We offer, like we said, sort of workshops, training, webinars, talks, etc. I'm also a certified ADHD coach, so I do a lot of coaching. You don't have to be diagnosed with ADHD. A lot of access to work, which is something worth looking into. You can get free coaching and support through that. We're on Instagram, perfectly.autistic. I'm on Instagram as Hester ADHD. We've got two Facebook communities, which are really important. Got Perfectly Autistic and Perfectly ADHD, and they are for people, partners, and parents who are autistic or have ADHD. And they're free communities, amazing, really kind, collaborative places. And also, we've got a website, perfectlyautistic.co.uk.
And of course, we'll put everything in the show notes so that you can find Hester and Kelly. So how have the things that we've talked about in today's episode resonated with you? Tell us your story. You can find us in our Facebook group, pop the comments on there, on our website, and of course, carry on listening to the Declutter Hub podcast. Thank you so much, Hester and Kelly. It's been an absolute honour to have you on both podcasts. Obviously, if you've not listened to the first one, do go back and listen. And we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to the Declutter Hub podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us in your podcast player so you don't miss an episode, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.